Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're moving on to chapter 3 of part 2 of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We have five chapters to go. And we have 9 days plus a 10th day where we'll have another test. So I thought that this week we would try to do chapters 3, 4, and 5. 3 chapters in 5 days rather than a chapter a day, which is what we've been doing so far. These chapters are a little long, really, I think. So today we'll begin chapter 3 and we'll do most of chapter 3. We've written on the board here some headings of some of the natural divisions or natural sections in this third chapter. Well, first of all, Gopikumar is in Vrindavan, but then he goes to Mahakalapur, which we have written up there on the board. Mahakalapur is the abode of impersonal liberation, and there is a particular form of the Lord presiding there, who is, in fact we heard the other day, he is the impersonal Brahman, but in a personal form. Yes, so he's not so totally personal as Krishna himself in his two-handed form, or even Lord Narayan. Although he is a person, but the impersonal aspect is prominent in him. And we'll see how that comes out as we go through. Then, so Gopikumar goes there. From, of course, the material world, he goes through the coverings. We'll discuss how he goes through the coverings. He reaches Mahakalapur, meets Lord Mahakala. That is a very interesting experience. And then he meets Lord Shiva. He's contemplating going back to Vrindavan, but while he's still there in Mahakalapur, he meets Lord Shiva, who is traveling on his way from Shivaloka to Mount Kailash. And they have some discussions. And then, as they're still there, actually, in Mahakalapur, this is all going on in Mahakalapur, but some inhabitants of Vrindavan pass through the Brahmajyoti, Mahakalapur, the impersonal aspect, or the impersonal region, you could say, just outside the coverings of the universe. So Lord Shiva explains a little bit about them, and then Gopikumar meets them, and they start preaching to him. There are two phases, really, to their preaching. One is they recommend that he perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And, in fact, particularly they actually recommend that he perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but with an emphasis on chanting. Actually, I should have put that there on the board. Yes, it's not just Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but it is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti with an emphasis on chanting. Anyway, the first part actually is about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And then the second part, they explain very clearly that chanting is the best process, the best of the 9 processes. And amongst the different types of chanting, because you can chant about the pastimes of the Lord, the philosophy of the Lord, or the holy names of the Lord, or like this. They're different subject matters for chanting, but particularly the inhabitants of Vaikuntha explain that of all the different types of chanting or subject matters for chanting, the best is the holy names. And in fact, that takes us to the end of the third chapter, but today I'm proposing that we will get somewhere into the middle of the discussion between Gopakumar and the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Let us see how it goes. But I'm not really intending finishing the whole chapter today. So, Gopakumar, last week we left Gopakumar in Brahmaloka as Lord Brahma. So, but he heard the debate between the great scriptures, and well, initially, of course, somehow his interest in impersonalism became aroused, or some interest was implanted in his heart about impersonalism. So then he heard the debate, and he became basically convinced that if you want to become liberated, devotional service is the best way to achieve that. And then the greatest of the great scriptures preached to him that actually devotional service is an end in itself. It is not just a matter of it being the best way to achieve liberation, but it is the supreme goal. It is the supreme activity, the supreme means for advancement, and the supreme end, the supreme goal, to just become advanced in devotional service and to become a pure devotee and lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Gopakumar, he became basically convinced, but still he had some desire, some interest at least, in understanding what is this liberation really. That was there. So he was instructed right at the end, then maybe you should go to Mahakalapur and see for yourself and get a little direct experience about liberation. So then he left Brahmaloka, and now at the beginning of chapter 3, Gopakumar is back in Vrindavan. Now he finds that because he's been in Brahmaloka for some time, he's been Lord Brahma for some time, so when he comes back to Earth, he finds Earth has changed due to the passage of time. He has not changed. He remains exactly the same cowherd boy, Gopakumar, young cowherd boy. He has not changed. But in general, the planet Earth has changed because a lot of time has passed. He's been there, well, for many days of Brahma, as Lord Brahma. So things have changed, but he comes back to Earth, he sees that, but then he goes to Vrindavan and he finds that Sri Vrindavan Dham has not changed. He must have very transcendental vision. I mean, at least some transcendental vision. Even though he's not perfect, he's not reached the goal, at least, that he is moving towards and being moved towards, in fact, by his guru and by the Lord. But still he's fairly advanced, so he sees Vrindavan Dham as having not changed. I guess he didn't see all the houses which are coming up around Vrindavan town, and the new cars and the billboards and whatnot, the factories out on the main road. I guess he didn't notice them. That's why I'm assuming he has somewhat transcendental vision, because on a certain level, Vrindavan Dham is reflecting the change which is going on in the external world pretty much as much, at least, you know, to some extent, considerable extent. But Gopa Kumar, his consciousness and his perception of things was such, he didn't really see. He didn't see any change. He saw no change, in fact, in Vrindavan. So the Lord had encouraged him, go to Vrindavan and move around, visit the places and like that. So he did that, and the Lord told him that you will meet your guru again. And sure enough, he meets his spiritual master for the third time. And as in all the other meetings, his spiritual master is completely absorbed, totally overwhelmed by symptoms of love of God. And in fact, he is just lying unconscious in a devotional trance, and very esoteric and extremely elevated state of pure love of God. So Gopa Kumar, finding his spiritual master in this very glorious transcendental condition, he tries to revive him by different means, sprinkling water on him and picking him up and speaking to him, and eventually through sprinkling him with water and various other means, he brings his spiritual master back to external consciousness. So his spiritual master just looked at him and immediately understood that Gopa Kumar is not a great interest in liberation, but he's got some interest, and he wants to go to that abode, the home of liberation, Mahakalapur, that place beyond the coverings of this universe, but it's not exactly in the Vaikuntha realm, at least certainly not in the sense of being like one of the Vaikuntha planets. It's somewhere in between. But it is beyond matter. So, his spiritual master gives him further instruction. If you recall, the first time, his spiritual master just gave him the most basic type of instruction. Gave him the mantra, and that was about it. Didn't tell him whether you chant it out loud or softly or when or if it's all the time or what it means even or what the results will be. But then, when they met in Jagannath Puri, he gave him little more detailed instruction about how to chant certain formalities or certain aspects to the process of chanting. So now this time he taught Gopa Kumar more about the chanting. Second time, of course, he gave him three benedictions. One of them we're already seeing, or two of them really, or maybe all three of them, but at least a couple of them we're seeing. Gopa Kumar is remaining a cowherd boy, and he is remaining in a condition which is such that he does not become seriously interested or attracted to other alternative methods or places. In other words, he remains ignorant, actually. And every time he hears about the next place he's going to go to, it's something completely new to him. So now, his spiritual master teaches him some little more esoteric aspects of the mantra. How to apply the syllables to his body. How to use appropriate mudras, hand gestures, while chanting the mantra. And other details of the process of worship through the mantra. Like touching the syllables. He taught him how to meditate on the form of the Lord, but the way he did that was by gestures of his hands. That's interesting. He didn't actually talk about it because he was afraid of becoming, if he started talking about the form of the Lord, he felt he would become too overwhelmed and just get totally carried away. And his, you know, relatively composed state in which he could give these, you know, practical instructions to someone who's relatively a lot more neophyte, he would lose that composed state and just go off again into his amazing condition of trance. So he told Gopakumar at the end of this little session of instruction, he told him that through chanting this mantra, you will understand all my instructions, and you will also understand other things that I'm not directly instructing you in, but you will understand them by the power of the mantra. Yes. So this is there in Krishna consciousness, that spiritual master gives instructions, but also if we follow the instructions, and of course particularly in this regard, we've been stressing this activity of chanting and getting special mercy from chanting under the instruction of the spiritual master. But realization comes and further understanding comes as we continue on. Comes from within, actually. Comes from within the heart as we continue on with the process. So instruction is coming from without, from the spiritual master, but there's also the element of some instruction coming from within. And the basis of that is chanting the mantras or rendering service very nicely. And the Lord, Chaitaguru, the spiritual master within the heart, he also gives some enlightenment through the heart. So then, Gopakumar fell at his guru's feet to offer obeisances. As soon as he looked up, his guru was gone again. He is a very remarkable spiritual master, this. He's a very special spiritual master. So, Gopakumar, having received this instruction, further instruction about chanting the mantra, so he started chanting his mantra even more attentively and more reverently than before. And then he noticed a very interesting thing. He noticed his body was transforming from a material one into a spiritual one. Yes. Without the material one dying, there was a transformation of body. Although he remained the same cowherd boy, but the body acquired a spiritual nature. And away he flew through the sphere of the sun, which is the doorway to liberation. You may recall in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna talks about that. Different routes that people, two different routes people may take. One, if they go through the route of the sun, then they can become liberated. But if they take the other route, then they return. They return. So he took that first route that Krishna does mention there, through the sphere of the sun to liberation. And as he passed through the universe and started approaching the coverings, he looked back across the 14 worlds and saw them all beneath him. So now we come to the parts which we've written on the board here. So he starts going through the universal coverings. As he goes through each covering, well, first covering is earth. So he sees within that covering, there is the deity of the earth, who is Mother Bhumi. And as he goes through each covering, he sees the immediate presiding deity of that covering or that element, particular element. But he sees that particular, the deity of that particular element worshipping a relevant form of the Lord. So when he goes through this first covering, the earth covering, he sees the deity of earth, Mother Earth, Bhumi, and she is worshipping the appropriate form of the Lord. Who would the appropriate form of the Lord be? Varaha. Yes. She is worshipping Lord Varaha. And actually he sees in that area of the earthly covering, he sees tremendous opulence and facilities for enjoyment. Yes, it is not just some sort of, you know, just earth, like a thick crust of earth or something like that, but there are features there. So he saw that there in that earthly covering, the opulence and the facilities for enjoyment were millions of times greater than in Brahmaloka. That's quite something, isn't it? Millions of times greater. And he saw Lord Varaha within each hair of his body were all the opulences of the universe. He had not seen that in Lord Mahapurusha. So his conclusion was, this is a higher form of the Lord, more opulent form of the Lord. An interesting thing is that it's explained there, not so much about him, it appears, but it's explained about people who pass through the coverings on their way to being liberated, that as they go through each covering, they're given a body made of that particular element. And, you know, then when they get to the next element, then the body is transformed into that type of element. Otherwise, if they just pass through in some other form, their bodies would be destroyed and their progress would be stopped, and somehow they would get caught there. Anyway, let us just say that at this point, he entered the earth covering. Mother Bhumi invited him, please stay here. He offered his respects and carried on, continued on. So next was the water covering. So there the deity of water was worshipping who, would you say, which form of the Lord? Matsya. And he noticed that the facilities for enjoyment and the opulences there were millions of times more than in the earthly covering. Just see. Then he moved on to the fire layer, and the deity there was worshipping who? Say? The fiery Surya. And the opulences and enjoyable facilities were millions of times greater there than in the fiery layer. So like this it goes on. The deity of air was worshipping Pradyumna. Oh, it says here in the overview book. Okay. The deity of ether. Who was the deity? Anyway, little error here, I think. The deity of ether was worshipping who? Aniruddha. The deity of false ego was worshipping Sankarshan. The deity of Mahatattva was worshipping Vasudev. So he went through all these layers, and each time the facilities and opulences and so on were millions of times greater. So you can just imagine by the time he got to the Mahatattva layer, the layer of Mahatattva, then must have been pretty opulent compared to Brahmaloka, what to speak of compared to here on earth. You wanted to say something? Air is Pradyumna, ether is Aniruddha, false ego is Sankarshan, and Mahatattva, that's correct, Vasudev. So then he came to Prakriti. He came to Prakriti. And saw the deity of material nature who was worshipping Mohini, that form of the Supreme Lord. So she is Subhadra, the daughter of Mother Yashoda and sister of Krishna. Yes, this is explained there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that this deity of the Prakriti, the primeval material nature, the most subtle form of ignorance, that this is Subhadra. She is, well, she told him, she preached to him sort of, or strongly encouraged him to stay there and said that I give liberation and I give devotional service. She said, I am a form of the internal potency, which is true, but she is an external expansion of the internal potency, so she is not quite the same. And he noticed that there was a subtle presence of ignorance there. So he felt there's a danger here if I stay. Although he was a little attracted, and she seemed, you know, like benevolent enough, she wanted to help him in his devotional service, but he decided not to stay there. And there, what did he see? He saw living entities with bodies made of pradan, which is the most subtle and most primeval form of matter. And the opulences and so on and so forth, the different features of that abode, were very amazing. He says words cannot describe them. The opulence is there. And the way things were transforming and the beauty and the activities that the people there with bodies made of pradan, what they were doing, words cannot describe them. It was very amazing. So Gopakumar, he didn't want to stay, live there, but he decided to check it out. So he walked around, moved around, had a look, and then passed on, carried on. So coming through that shadowy, that Prakriti layer, it was blackish blue in color. Coming through that shadowy, blackish blue area of subtle and like ultimate ignorance, he came into an area so bright, so splendid with light, he couldn't keep his eyes open. It was so amazing, so brilliantly, dazzlingly effulgent. Then he opened his eyes, gradually tried to adjust his eyes. And what did he see? Who did he see? Lord Mahakala, as brilliant as millions of suns. And Lord Mahakala was the most amazing form of the Lord he had seen so far. He had never seen anything like that. He was sheltering material nature in a very benevolent way, facilitating her pastimes. The Mahapurusha, you know, the other presiding deities, the presiding deities were accepting worship. Lord Mahapurusha on Brahmaloka was ruling material nature in a kind of, you know, sort of forceful way. But here, Lord Mahakala was in a very benevolent, shelter-giving mood, giving shelter to material energy. So he looked at Lord Mahakala and saw that the Lord was changing forms. Sometimes he would become formless. And when this happened, Gopakumar became somewhat bewildered, and it seemed he was about to merge. So then quickly he remembered Lord Jagannath, and then he saw the form of Lord Mahakala again. But then after a little while, Lord Mahakala again became formless, and it seemed like Gopakumar was actually going to merge. But then he was saved by the light beams, some light beams coming from the Lord's reddish toenails. So then he gazed at the beauty of the Lord. He saw the Lord was surrounded by associates, but they didn't have personalities. He saw that the Lord, in that benevolent mood, was sort of at least feeling, or I don't know about relating with, but at least he picked up a mood within the Lord, that the Lord was seeing these people as his devotees. But actually, those people, devotees, let us just say people, they were not really devotees in the sense that they wanted to serve him. But at least they were serving him effectively by being part of his effulgence. So in other words, he is seeing the Brahma Jyoti and how the Brahma Jyoti really is. But the Lord was feeling that these are my devotees in a benevolent type of mood. They were in a condition of bade obeyed, difference and non-difference. Their separate personalities were dormant and invisible. Hare Krishna. Now I know that's a little sort of hard to grasp, but that's the way it was. That's the way it was. And that's the way it is, actually. We know that in the Brahma Jyoti, there are many, many spirit souls, but their personalities are dormant. So they're just vibrating there as little spiritual particles. They have not exactly merged. The example is given of the green parrot entering the green tree. To our, you know, vision, from our little distant perspective, we may no longer see the green parrot, and therefore someone might think he has actually become part of the tree. But actually he's there. So in a somewhat similar sense, the spirit souls who become impersonally realized, they enter the Brahma Jyoti, they do not exactly merge with it. Although from a distance you don't see them, you just see the effulgence. But they are there in their individual capacities, but their individual personalities and so on are not manifest. They're just vibrating as little spiritual particles. So Gopakumar saw that. And he saw that, in a sense, they were sort of serving the Lord by being there within the Brahma Jyoti. This is the Lord's pastime, at least, to have his effulgence and have the living entities hovering there. So in that sense, they were taking part in a certain function of the Lord, of Lord Mahakala. So Gopakumar, seeing Lord Mahakala, he was fluctuating between two states of consciousness. One state of consciousness was that this is the most amazing form of the Lord I've seen. Perhaps this is the perfection of life. But on the other hand, sometimes the Lord would become formless, and there'd be some danger that Gopakumar would lose his personality and individuality like the other living entities there, and he might become one of them. So he was frightened. So he was fluctuating between being attracted to Lord Mahakala and thinking, now I've met the Lord. I've found my Lord of the universe, of all the universes. So being attracted like that, and in that state, considering staying there, but then at other times feeling fearful and actually feeling the danger and, you know, of being kind of drawn into this impersonal state.
So
Did Gopakumar have the option to merge or not to merge? He had the option to enter or not to enter. You know, we just said that people don't really merge, because merge means you cease to be an individual as such. So these entities there, Gopakumar saw clearly that they were individuals. They had not actually merged. They had entered the Brahma Jyoti. So he had the option. In fact, he was under a type of pressure to merge, and he had to kind of fight against it to retain his individuality. And one time he was fighting, but then he got that special mercy from the beams of light coming from the Lord's toes, and then he resumed his fully personal condition. So while all this was going on, what was Gopakumar doing? He was chanting his mantra. And as he kept chanting his mantra, he was making further progress in the chanting while there in Mahakalapur. And as he was making further progress, he found he was becoming more and more attracted to Lord Madan Gopal and his remembrance of Lord Madan Gopal, and more distant, or gradually he was becoming distant from Lord Mahakala. He was losing interest in Lord Mahakala. This is the natural, one of the natural results of his chanting. Wherever he goes, he continues chanting. And initially, there's some period of being attracted to the Lord in that place and that particular place. But gradually, as he continues chanting, he gradually loses interest and becomes impelled forward. Yes. So then, he reached a certain point and he thought, I think I better go back to Vrindavan. This is not for me. And if I go back there, somehow or other, if I go back there and keep chanting, then I'll discover something else. There'll be a next stage for me to go on to. And maybe it'll be the stage, the final stage, and I'll find my deity. So he was contemplating going back to Vrindavan, but he didn't yet. While still there, in the distance he heard some singing, and he saw some people coming. They were dancing. And he saw amongst those people, there was a very impressive looking person who had a woman sitting on his lap. This woman was white, really white. So Gopakumar wondered, who is this who seems to be above impersonal liberation? Yes, this person was not coming from the material worlds. He was coming from the other side. Gopakumar had come in, you know, through the coverings. This person was coming the other way. So it was Lord Shiva, and he was coming from Shiva Loka, which is beyond the material worlds, through the Brahma Jyoti. He was on his way to Kailash within the material world. This is what was happening. So, Lord Shiva looked very amazing. His skin was white like camphor. He had three eyes. He was dressed only with the sky. And he had a charming garland. It is described as a charming garland of bones. Bones. B-O-N-E-S. Bones. Of great devotees. But it looked charming. So Gopakumar, he didn't know it's Lord Shiva. He doesn't know who is Lord Shiva. So he went to one of the more kind of prominent looking of the associates, who is Nandishvara, who is different from Nandi the bull. He is a human being, Nandishvara. And he asked him, who is this? Where does he live? And where's he going now? So Nandishvara explained, this is Lord Shiva, the Lord of the universe, the giver of liberation and devotional service. He's on his way to Kailash. Gopakumar, of course, had never heard of Lord Shiva. And then Nandishvara explained that actually he is one. He is not different from, he is one with Krishna. So then Gopakumar, he couldn't quite, well, he couldn't understand how could this be true, but he was attracted. How could Lord Shiva and Krishna be one? Because he does know that he's looking for Krishna. He knows. He's looking for a particular form of Krishna. So here now, he's hearing that Lord Shiva and Krishna are one. So he can't understand it, but he's attracted. So he followed on as they went traveling on. He followed with them. And Nandishvara started explaining something about the oneness, although it doesn't say there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita really how he explained the oneness. But then to encourage Gopakumar, he explained, because see the idea here is that Gopakumar, he may stay and become a follower of Lord Shiva because he's one with Krishna. So why not? So Nandishvara, in order to encourage Gopakumar to do this, explains different reasons why the followers of Lord Shiva are satisfied following him and they don't follow Lord Vishnu. In other words, he's saying that Lord Shiva is kind of higher than Lord Vishnu, which is not entirely true, not really true. So he said, he always remains, I think you should note these points down. Lord Shiva always remains in one form. In other words, he never becomes formless like Lord Mahakala. So you would be better off following him. And then another aspect of that is, he is very stable. He's a very stable person. His personality is very stable. He not only does he not become formless like Lord Mahakala, but he doesn't manifest multi-forms like Lord Vishnu, Lord Nrisingadev, Lord Varaha, Lord Kurama, Lord Ram, this form, that form, so many forms. You know, it's enough. I guess Nandishvara thinks it's enough to make a person a little schizophrenic. You don't know who you're dealing with. And he never goes away. He never leaves. His devotees are always satisfied because he's always with them. He never leaves them. So now, of course, this is not entirely true, but this is Nandishvara being enthusiastic about his Lord Shiva and trying to encourage Gopakumar to join them and become one of the followers of Lord Shiva and stay. So then he mentions some other things they're nice characteristics of Lord Shiva. He's always having festivals, glorifying the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And he acts in such ways, he manifests certain non-different aspects to encourage his followers to become attracted to him, but then to become attracted to Lord Vishnu. So he manifests some features that Lord Vishnu has. His followers become attracted to him on the basis of those features, but then they become attracted to Lord Vishnu later. You know, they kind of graduate on to Lord Vishnu, who has those features more. And he humbly worships Lord Shesha. Now, the reason he worships Lord Shesha is because Lord Shesha has like a connection with Lord Shiva in that they both take part in the process of universal devastation. Lord Shesha is also involved in the process of devastation with Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva worships him. So Gopakumar, he got inspired and he thought, all right. He started preaching to his mind, come on, just be satisfied with this Lord Shiva. He is the Lord of the universes. He is very wonderful. So he tried to convince himself that now I've found my Lord. But then he found that he wasn't so satisfied. Because he kept on chanting his mantra. And he was getting more realization that actually this Lord Shiva, he may be non-different in some respects, but he's not so non-different. He's not particularly non-different. You know, there are some differences, and particularly he's not so sweet as Lord Madan Gopal. He's not so beautiful. He's not so sweet. So Lord Shiva noticed this, and he manifested a Gopal form. And Gopakumar was quite attracted by this, but what did he do? He kept chanting his mantra. And then he realized that this is not, even though it's Gopal, he's not the same as my Gopal, Madan Gopal. He's not the same. So this was going on. Suddenly, they heard some amazing singing. Gopakumar had never heard singing like this before. It was very incredible singing. The whole party stopped. Suddenly Lord Shiva became totally overwhelmed with ecstasy. He fell off Nandi, started dancing wildly. Gopakumar looked in the direction of the singing. He saw a group of four armed people. The sight of them was so amazing, Gopakumar became speechless. They were incredibly beautiful. Their effulgences made the followers of Lord Shiva almost invisible. They were so beautiful, they made their ornaments beautiful. And they were accompanied by Sanaka. And Gopakumar was struck by this because he knew that we met in Tapaloka. But the thing is, Sanaka. Well, there is a description that here at this particular point of how Sanaka, well, the four Kumars actually, that they are not really residents of Tapaloka. They are residents of Vaikuntha. But they're there on Tapaloka to encourage the inhabitants of Tapaloka and direct them and guide them. But actually they're inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Anyway, Gopakumar became so overwhelmed that he didn't know, am I seeing them with my eyes or with my mind? Am I seeing them externally or internally? He wanted to surrender at their lotus feet and become their servant, but he couldn't say anything. He felt too insignificant, and he was struck speechless anyway. Lord Shiva lunged forward and started embracing them and collapsed in a trance. So then, on the request of Uma Devi, the wife of Lord Shiva, Ganesh came and quietly informed Gopakumar, these are inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Yes, he didn't want to say it or any of the things he was about to say too loud because he didn't want to confuse the associates of Lord Shiva. So he quietly told Gopakumar that these are inhabitants of Vrindavan, of Vaikuntha. They're on their way to visit different universes. Some of them are going to four-headed Brahma's universes, some eight-headed, some 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, and so on. And why are they going? They're going to protect the devotees and to spread devotional service. And he explained they're even going to protect the devotees who only chant Krishna's name as a joke. You know, we get this, don't we get this so much? Haribo! You know, I mean, when you're walking through the streets of Vrindavan and here and there, get all these mischievous little people, and in there, you know, they're not, as we say Haribo to each other, they're not saying Haribo to us like that. It's like, you know, Haribo, and but they're kind of pulling our legs. Of course, they're special here in Vrindavan. But you get people like that. They chant Hare Krishna as a joke or in a negligent way, an ignorant way, or in other words, namabas. That stage of the clearing stage of chanting or something connected to it, preliminary part of it. So even people like that, Ganesh explained, these inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they're going to protect them and help them and all the devotees, actually. So Gopakumar, he felt, I want to join them. I want to go to that place that they've come from. So Lord Shiva saw this and spoke to Gopakumar and said that, you know, it's not easy. He said, Lord Brahma and I are struggling. We're striving to go there. that if you perform, there's one verse, Lord Shiva speaks in his prayers in the fourth canto, the song sung by Lord Shiva, that if you perform your duties, Varnashram duties, perfectly for 100 lifetimes, you can become Lord Brahma, or we heard the other day, an associate at least. If not, you know, it's not that easy to become a Lord Brahma. But if you get 100 times more mercy, you can become Lord Shiva, or an associate of Lord Shiva. So, Lord Shiva says, if you get 100 times more mercy than that, then you can go to Vaikuntha. But then he told Gopakumar a very amazing thing. He said, actually, I can see you are qualified. You know why you're qualified? By the mercy of your guru and through chanting the mantra. For these two reasons, by the potency of these two things, these two parts of your life, you have the qualification. You can go there. Then Lord Shiva said, you know, look, my abode, it's only for the impersonalists. You don't want to stay here. Don't stay here. I just do this, you know, I just attract people here because it's my service. The Lord wants me to do it. But actually, I don't really want to do it. It's not for the devotees. And he tells Gopakumar, just avoid my abode. Just avoid it. And actually, Lord Shiva said a very interesting thing. He said, normally, when people come to my abode, Mahakalapur, when people come to my abode, normally they cannot see Lord Mahakala. But it's just because you are such an advanced devotee, therefore you are able to see Lord Mahakala. Otherwise, you'd just, you know, you wouldn't be able to. So then the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, hearing Lord Shiva speaking in a very humble way about himself, they came and glorified Lord Shiva and Parvati as partial incarnations. They said, you're not different from our Lord, Vaikunthanath. And Uma is not different from Parvati as partial expansions. So, you know, not absolutely, but as partial expansions. And they said that you are such a nice devotee, you are qualified also. Yes, this is, you have expressed a very suitable mood. So then they started speaking to Gopakumar, saying that we count you as one of us. That we have come for you. We have come here for you. And I think we'll continue on tomorrow. Is that okay? I'll just tell you another thing they say. They say that your guru, Jayanta, is a form of Krishna. Now, they don't mean that he's actually an avatar as such, but in the Shaktivesh sense. And they say his name is Jayanta. So here we find out the name of his guru. His name is Jayanta, and he is from Mathura, and he is a type of incarnation of Krishna, an empowered type of incarnation. But they have come from Vaikuntha to get him, Gopikumar. They're not going to take him right now, but they've come to instruct him how he can come to Vaikuntha. So then they're going to instruct him in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and then particularly, well, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti in terms of the nine processes, but particularly the process of chanting, and particularly the process of chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? The question is that in regard to how Ganesh, on the instruction of Parvati, explained to Gopikumar who these Vaikuntha residents are. So the question is, does that mean that he's also beyond the modes? Well, it appears from this description that at least, there is a form of Ganesh who's associating with that form of Lord Shiva who's above the modes. There are different forms of Lord Shiva who are in different positions. So there is certainly the form of Lord Shiva, and this is him, who gives liberation. He gives it, what to speak of having it or being beyond the modes. So it appears that his intimate associates are with him also in that capacity. At least that appears to be the import of the way it's presented here. Although there's no detailed description of what is the position of this Ganesh and how it all works, but it appears that this is all going on beyond the modes right at this point in time. Yeah, so it appears there's a form of Ganesh who's in that position. Or in other words, there are certain associates of Lord Shiva who are in that position, or who have, certain features who are in that position, although there may be other forms of themselves who are not exactly in that position. Ganesh, he's famous as a pure devotee of Lord Nrsingadev, actually. And, Rupa Goswami recommended to worship Ganesh to remove obstacles in devotional service. Now, of course, that's getting into a more esoteric area of our Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and we don't do that. And Prabhupada himself explained that we should not try to do it. But it appears that, for some people with certain qualification in Krishna consciousness, that it is practical for them in transcendental terms to worship Ganesh, but as that devotee of Lord Nrsingadev. Any other comment or question? Srila Prabhupada explains that what would constitute a Krishna conscious type of demigod worship for us would be reciting the verses from Brahma Samhita, which talk about, certain of the demigods. Yeah, but, Srila Prabhupada never spoke about another, like a process of puja or something like that. Although it's there, the Gaudiya Math, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta himself established it, according to my understanding. In some places they worship Lord Shiva as a devotee. And in their temples, you may have seen in some of their temples, they have Lord Shiva. And there's some sort of process of worship of him as a Vaishnav. But Srila Prabhupada didn't get us into it, and he suggested you know, if we want to do recognize their position sort of in a Krishna conscious way, we can chant those verses from Brahma Samhita. Prabhupada ki jai.